Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, March 21st. Support grows to save Ranchland Hills. Residents not against new school campuses seek alternate sites to prevent closure of golf club. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Supporters of the Save Ranchland Hills initiative spoke at the MISD board meeting Tuesday. On Tuesday morning, two of its representatives approached Midland County to discuss the possibility of considering alternate locations for the new Midland High School campus, which is one of two new high school campuses planned to be built as a part of the $1.4 billion MISD bond package that Midland voters approved in November. Tuesday evening, there was a much larger collection of supporters donning green T-shirts that read, "Save Ranchland Hills." MISD purchased Ranchland Hills in 2019 for $9.5 million, which it planned to use as a future school site. A Midlander named Kevin Williams said residents still use Ranchland Hills frequently. It's a great value to the community, and its closure would continue to cut down on the area's affordable golfing venues after Nueva Vista Golf Club closed in July. Williams said not everybody can afford to play golf at private country clubs, and membership will become more expensive with increased demand. Quote, "The private country clubs that are out there, as their waiting list grows, they're going to go up on their prices," he said. He added that he and the rest of the group are not against building new high school campuses, but want to investigate other possible locations for the school before the venue is closed, given the golf club is still heavily used by the community and has historical significance. Ranchland Hills has been standing for around 70 to 75 years, according to supporters. Gary Wilson said he and the Save Ranchland Hills group have come up with one, possibly two different locations for the MHS campus. Wilson said one of the pieces of land was brought to the city, and they are hopeful the city will make an offer on it with MISD's backing. Reagan Hinojos was the lone naysayer of the Save Ranchland Hills initiative during public comment on Tuesday, but said he represented the majority of Midland voters. Quote, "The majority of voters approved a $1.4 billion bond in order to use the existing site of Ranchland Golf Course for the future MHS campus. I don't believe we should, nor do I believe it is ethical to violate that proposal. The majority of voters approved that plan when they passed the school bond," Hinojosa said. He claimed that plans for the school are already being designed and contractors are being contacted for construction services. "This attempt to save Ranchland Hills is too late in the process," according to Hinojosa. He said that MISD should respect the results of the November bond election. On February 28th, MISD recapped its bond committee meeting in a press release, which included bond status updates regarding the two new high schools. Pfluger Architects has been selected for architectural and engineering services of the two new comprehensive high schools based on their qualifications. Dunaway has been approved by the Board of Trustees as the surveying firm for the two new high school projects. The design phase for the new high schools is currently underway. District and campus leaders visited schools in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and Lubbock-Cooper. These site visits were intended to provide attendees with an idea of how 21st century learning spaces look. The visits allowed attendees to provide feedback to architects about areas of these campuses that would be a good fit for the new Midland High School and Legacy High School. Peer group meetings will be held March 5th and 6th to discuss specific areas of design for the new high schools. Pfluger's architectural team will facilitate these meetings. These meetings are intended to discuss specific areas of the schools with representatives from the district familiar with each area. The completion date of the schools is slated for 2028. The cost to build the new high schools is $985 million. On March 5th, MISD and Pfluger Architects released a survey to school staff, parents, students, and the community to collect feedback on the design process of the campus. Industry and academics react to methane emissions study. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. There are a plethora of studies underway about how much methane, carbon dioxide, and other greenhouse gases are being emitted by the nation's oil and gas industry. A recent study, published in the journal Nature, garnered attention with its report that U.S. wells, pipelines, and compressors are spewing three times the amount of methane as the government thinks. The study also said those emissions cause $9.3 billion in yearly climate damage. However, the study found that because over half those emissions come from a tiny amount of sites, 1% or less, the problem is fairly fixable. Quote, "There are a lot of studies that are being done on the methane issue based on any number of assumptions and data from various sources. But the bottom line is that the story for the industry is a relatively good one," commented W. Bruce Bullock, Jane and Pat Boland Endowed Executive Director at the McGuire Energy Institute, Southern Methodist University Cox School of Business. In an email to the Reporter-Telegram, Bullock noted that the oil and gas industry accounts for roughly 29% of the methane emissions in the U.S., according to the Environmental Protection Agency. He further noted that total methane emissions since 1990 have decreased by 16%, with oil and gas industry emissions falling even further, while the agriculture industry's emissions have increased over that time. Quote, "It is relatively fixable, as the study says. While low natural gas prices remove an economic incentive to lower emissions, the Inflation Reduction Act now imposes a $900 per ton, rising to $1,500 per ton fee on methane emissions, which should lower them further," he wrote. The study's findings were of little surprise to Dr. Gunnar Shade, an associate professor in the Department of Atmospheric Studies at Texas A&M University. He has worked in the Pecos area before and analyzed its high atmospheric petroleum hydrocarbon levels, he told the Reporter-Telegram last December. He told the Reporter-Telegram by email his reaction to the study in Nature was both a shrug and applause because the study essentially confirms prior studies, end quote. It confirms, he wrote, that the bulk of emissions comes from a small subset of sites, and it is much higher than what the inventory lists. As that set can be very small relative to all surface sites, only extensive sampling captures the emissions distribution. Prior works strongly hinted at that, but associated extrapolations had comparatively large uncertainty margins. The inventory, by definition, does not count the bulk of emissions because they are non-routine. The large spatial and thus site coverage of these airborne studies has provided better statistics, not only confirming prior works, but also showing that prior estimates were likely conservative, a standard feature of most such science. Attention to the issue is required and working, meaning a mindset of awareness, attention, and remediation, still not widely present in the industry and essentially denied by Texas regulatory agencies, can tackle the issue, as was recently again highlighted by the works of Dr. Arvid Ravikumar, co-director of the Energy Emissions Modeling and Data Lab at the University of Texas at Austin, whose group showed that LDAR works to reduce emissions. The industry has fought associated EPA regulations, such as requiring more frequent LDAR, since the second Obama administration. Quote, meaning, he wrote, we know this, we know how to fix most of this, we just need decision makers and agencies and leaders in the industry to get their head out of the sand and act, end quote. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, defended the industry's emissions reduction efforts, telling the Reporter Telegram by email that, quote, the oil and natural gas industry has for years worked to meaningfully reduce methane emissions, and industry remains committed to building upon its already immense progress protecting and improving the environment while responsibly producing irreplaceable oil and natural gas to provide the affordable, reliable energy that literally fuels modern life, end quote. Examples of environmental progress by industry include, between 2012 and 2021, U.S. flaring intensity fell 46%, according to the World Bank Global Gas Flaring Tracker. From 2018 to 2022, methane emissions declined as a whole across the nation's top oil and natural gas basins, with the Anadarko, Permian, and Gulf Coast basins in Texas declining by 44%, 32%, and 18% respectively, according to EPA data provided by Energy in Depth. In the Permian Basin, methane emissions intensity has declined by more than 75% since 2011, and operators are capturing 99.8% of natural gas produced for beneficial use, according to Texans for Natural Gas. The increased use of natural gas in generating electricity is a key reason U.S. CO2 emissions have fallen to generational lows, according to the Energy Information Administration. Industry-led initiatives such as Texas Methane and Flaring Coalition and the Environmental Partnership continue to fuel this progress, Staples wrote. He added that in 2022, actions taken by partnership members resulted in an increase in the number of monitoring surveys to quickly and proactively find and fix methane emission events by 43% from the previous year. Perfect weather for now. Enjoy clear, sunny skies before a weak cold front arrives next week. The story was written by Anthony Franz, newsroom meteorologist. West Texas is known for its extreme weather, especially in the springtime. It's either too hot, too cold, too windy, or we're dealing with the threat of massive hail. Over the next few days, we won't be dealing with any of that. So be sure to get outside and enjoy this stretch of nearly perfect weather in West Texas. We all know it won't last for long. Thursday's forecast. Morning temperatures will be cool, but not too cold, as lows drop into the low 50s in Midland, Odessa. Partly cloudy skies are expected as temperatures rise steadily throughout the day. We'll reach 60 degrees just after 10 a.m. on our way to the low 70s by the late afternoon. Considering that wind speeds will only be 10 to 15 miles per hour, it doesn't get much better. There is a chance of a few scattered showers and weak storms from the morning through the afternoon. However, with dry air in place, only 10 to 20% of West Texas will experience any rainfall at all. The vast majority will stay dry. Nice weather continues. The weather looks even better on Friday. Skies are expected to clear out, which will help temperatures drop into the mid-40s by early Friday morning. But they won't stay chilly for long. Highs will rise into the mid to upper 70s under bright, sunny skies. Better yet, wind speeds are only going to move in at 5 to 10 miles per hour, a rarity for West Texas. By Saturday, nice weather will continue, but partly cloudy skies will move in and wind speeds will increase to around 15 to 20 miles per hour. Temperatures will be very close to average for late March, as morning lows drop to the upper 40s and highs rise to the low to mid-70s. Even with the extra cloud cover, there's no chance of rain across West Texas. Winds pick up. As a low-pressure system approaches from the west, wind speeds will pick up dramatically on Sunday. Expect winds at 25 to 35 miles per hour during the afternoon and evening, and some wind gusts could approach 45 miles per hour as a weak cold front moves through West Texas. Before the front arrives, highs will reach the mid-70s once again. The cold front will also bring a slight chance of thunderstorms to West Texas. However, weather models indicate that the best chances will stay east of Midland-Odessa in the far eastern Permian Basin and toward Abilene and San Angelo. Overall rain chances in the Petroplex are only 10 to 20% Sunday night through early Monday. Cooler start to next week. While the cold front won't bring any winter air into West Texas, it will send below-average temperatures to the region by early next week. Both Monday and Tuesday will include low temperatures in the 40s and highs rising into the 60s. In typical West Texas fashion, rain chances are going to stay very low. Besides the small rain chance late Sunday, dry weather is expected all of next week. Midland Police Department, City, will wait for courts to decide on Senate bill. The story was written by Scott Nunn. The unprecedented Texas law that would empower state officials to arrest and deport migrants is tied up in a battle of the courts, so it should be of no surprise the City of Midland and Midland Police Department announced Wednesday that they would wait for further guidance before enforcement. Quote, "The Midland Police Department and the City of Midland will wait on the courts to decide whether Senate Bill 4 may be enforced before making any statements on its implementation," a statement from the city reads. Passed in 2023, Senate Bill 4 was allowed to take effect Tuesday and effectively created a new chapter in the Texas Penal Code titled Illegal Entry into the State. This created three new criminal offenses, allowing law enforcement to detain and jail people suspected of entering the U.S. illegally. While the bill went into effect Tuesday, only a few short hours later on Wednesday, it was held up again by a federal appeals court, leaving a cloud of uncertainty around the bill. Skylar Hearn, executive director of the Sheriff's Association of Texas, told the Houston Chronicle that law enforcement has been fielding questions surrounding the bill for several months. quote, he said there's been a lot of hyperbole about the law, but he doesn't believe many law enforcement officers outside of border counties will rely on SB 4 for immigration enforcement, the Chronicle article reads. Fort Worth Police Department expressed a similar sentiment in a video it posted on social media Monday, stating the department's mission will not change with the passing of SB 4. However, this may cause contention with some officials in the state, such as Texas House Speaker Dade Phelan, who said on social media that all police departments are expected to carry out the law. Quote, compliance with state law is not optional, it is mandatory, part of Phelan's post in response to a video posted by Fort Worth Police Department reads. Quote, any local law enforcement agency that refuses to enforce Senate Bill 4 is abandoning their sworn duty to uphold the rule of law. End quote. The Reporter-Telegram will continue to follow local government and agencies' response to SB 4.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, March 21st, 2024. Entertainment. Three things to do in Midland, March 22nd through 24th, by B.K. Richter. From a transformative session with a healer trained by a shaman, to an open blues jam session, to a classic car show benefiting two local fire departments, here's a list of three things to do in Midland. Walk-in Reiki sessions. Earth, Body, and Soul, located at 333 North Midkiff, will be hosting walk-in Reiki sessions where no appointment is necessary. The service boasts quick cleansing services Friday, March 22nd, from 3 to 6 p.m. The listing advertises the transformative power of Reiki with Bridget, a seasoned practitioner trained by a practicing shaman and elevated to the prestigious level 21 as a Grand Reiki Master. Your vibrant energy awaits. Bring Your Own Blues Open Blues Jam. A free community blues jam session hosted by the Greater West Texas Blues Society is slated for Saturday, March 23rd from 7 to 10:30 p.m. Guests are encouraged to bring their instruments or voices to style their blues profile. The sound, stage, and backline are all provided. The doors open at 6 p.m. and the venue, the destination, at 1705 West Industrial is said to be family and pet friendly. Classic Car Show. Diamondback Waste Services, Wolf Sales and Service, and Rotation Resources present a classic car show slated for Sunday, March 24th from 11 a.m. until 7 p.m. at Rooster's Backyard, 6221 FM 307 in Midland. The entry fee is $20 per vehicle, and all cars, trucks, and bikes are welcome. The sign-up for the contest closes at 1 p.m. with the awards ceremony set for 5 p.m. The car competition will feature awards for Best of Show, People's Choice, Best Motorcycle, and Best Engine. All proceeds from the car contest will benefit the Greenwood Volunteer Fire Department and Northeast Volunteer Fire Department.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, March 21st. Daphne Shaw Bledsoe passed away on Monday, March 11th, at the age of 95. Born in 1928 in Marlin, Texas, she was the cherished sixth child of James Henry Shaw and Sylvia Randall Shaw. Stephanie's journey through life was marked by love, service, and unwavering faith. In 1946, she married Wilbert Bledsoe, and together they nurtured a beautiful family of six children. A woman of profound compassion and dedication, Daphne's professional life was a testament to her commitment to uplifting others. She served as a beacon of hope for the less fortunate as a community action program leader, assisted in guiding the youth through her involvement in the 4-H Club, provided care and guidance to children as the daycare director of Carver Culture Center in Leveland, and faithful volunteer at Atmos in Midland. She was preceded in death by her husband, Wilbert, and daughter, Betty Jean Lathan, and she is survived by daughters Mary Louise Bledsoe of Dallas, Texas, and Sylvia Sims of Humble, Texas, sons Bishop Wilbert Earl Bledsoe of Houston, Purvis Bledsoe of Stonecrest, Georgia, and Larry Bledsoe of Temple, Texas, as well as 17 grandchildren, 41 great-grandchildren, and 15 great-great-grandchildren. Additionally, she is survived by her niece, Alice Shaw, nephew, Bobby Shaw, her play sister, Ms. Ophelia Hurd, and a host of relatives and friends. Services to celebrate the life of Daphne Shaw Bledsoe will be held on Thursday, March 28th at 11 a.m., viewing 10 a.m. at the Visionary Hollowell Community United Methodist Church at 400 South Marshall in Midland, Texas, with Reverend Wendell Smith officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to Brownwood Funeral Home, Brownwood, Texas. Following the service, she will be laid to rest at Fairview Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family kindly requests that donations be made to the Visionary Hollowell United Methodist Church in honor of Daphne's lifelong commitment to serving those in need. Timothy Dale Tim Carter, age 61, of Midland, passed away on Friday, February 9th. He was born on March 26, 1962, in Big Spring, Texas, to Jimmy Dale Carter and Bonita Sproles Carter. Tim grew up in Midland, where he enjoyed riding dirt bikes in the Caliche pits and along the old Holiday Hill Road. Tim is survived by his wife, Pamela Carter, of Midland, his parents, Jim and Bonnie Carter, of Midland, his son, Evan Carter, grandson, Nathan Carter, and stepdaughter, Astrid Murray, of Midland. He is also survived by his brother, Ken Scooter Carter, and wife Cindy of Bozeman, Montana, sister Jenny Wilkie, and husband Calvin of Midland, as well as several nieces and nephews. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, March 26th, at the Seventh-day Adventist Church, 3114 Travis Avenue in Midland. Ulysses H. Maxwell passed away. He was a longtime resident of Midland for over 70 years. Ulysses Maxwell passed away peacefully in his sleep, surrounded by loved ones, on March 13th in Waco, Texas. Celebration for Ulysses Maxwell will be on March 23rd, 2024, at 11 a.m. at McDowell Chapel, 1725 Golson Road in Waco. Annie Laurie Bates, age 97, passed away on Sunday, March 17th. Services will be held at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland on Monday, March 25th at 10 a.m. Born in Fort Worth in 1926, Annie married her high school sweetheart, John Paul Bates, before his deployment to Europe in World War II. During her high school years at Pascal High School, she won the city tennis doubles championship, although she was always quick to add that her partner played 95% of that game. Upon John's return from World War II, the couple moved to Denver, Colorado, where she had two sons. In 1958, they moved to Midland, Texas, where she stayed for most of her adult life. In 2013, she moved to Houston to live with her son and his wife, and then moved with them to Waco in 2016. Anne is preceded in death by her husband, John Paul Bates, her son, John Paul Bucky Bates Jr., and her sister, Evelyn Dollar. She is survived by her son, James Bates, and his wife, Ramona of Waco, daughter-in-law, Anne Elizabeth Bates, as well as four grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, Anne's family requests any memorials be made to your local church or the Methodist Children's Home at 1111 Herring Avenue in Waco, Texas. Dennis Lynn Shaver, age 56, of Odessa, passed away on March 17th in Odessa. A celebration of life will be held on Friday, March 22nd at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home with Jimmy Braswell officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Barbara Marchant Elliott, age 81, of Midland, peacefully passed away on the evening of March 14th. Barbara was born to Bill and Marianne Redders on January 24, 1943, in Corsicana, Texas. She married Jesse Page in 1961 and Charles Marchant in 1963. She then was married to Al Elliott in 2010. She is preceded in death by her parents, her sister Jeanette Kilpatrick, and three husbands. She is survived by a brother, Jim Redders, and his wife Karen of Mineola, Texas. She is also survived by her son, Dan Marchant, and her daughter, Carrie Schreiber, both of Key West, Florida, as well as three grandchildren. Barbara moved to Midland in 1953 when her father was working for Southwestern Bell. She attended Sam Houston Elementary, Cowden Junior High, and graduated from Midland High School in 1961. She worked as a professional seamstress and a stay-at-home mom for several years. The family will receive friends for visitation on Thursday, March 21st, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. The family will host a visitation and light reception on Friday, March 22nd, from 10:30 to 11:45 a.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. Funeral services will begin in the chapel at 12 noon, followed by interment at Ellis Rest Haven Memorial Park. Juanita Diaz, age 91, of Midland, passed away on March 18th. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. on Thursday, March 21st, at St. Anne's Catholic Church, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Juanita was born June 25th, 1932, in Lorain, Texas. She grew up in Colorado City and was married to Roman Diaz for 70 years, in which he served in the U.S. military. They had seven children together. She is survived by daughter Eva Diaz Granado and sons Ruben Diaz and Roman Diaz Jr., 11 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by Roman Diaz, Marge Villa, and Lydia Leja. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, March 21st. oil field thieves target variety of valuables. PBPA says the problem is so severe as to resemble organized crime. Oil field theft has become a pressing problem, and the Permian Basin Petroleum, Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners, and Texas Oil and Gas Associations say it is a plague that requires a multifaceted cure. Individual crimes of convenience, where someone comes across a tool left out in the open or an unlocked, unmonitored vehicle, are one thing, said PBPA President Ben Shepard. However, what members of the oil and gas industry have been experiencing more recently in the field has been described as organized crime. Traditional targets of copper, tools, or other heavy equipment that might be relatively easy to move are not the only targets. Full tanker truck loads of produced oil have been removed from private locations throughout the Permian Basin. Shepard said loads of tubing and even an entire pump jack have also been stolen. These illegal activities require organization and communication before, during, and after the commission of the crime by multiple involved parties, he said. When it comes to oil, this type of theft also requires the knowledge of a willing end buyer who doesn't question the origins of the oil. Referring to the sheriff's multi-county FBI-backed Permian Basin Oilfield Theft Task Force, oil company security personnel, and other officials, Shepard said the PBPA is engaging with its members, local law enforcement, and FBI, local, state, and federal elected officials, and other stakeholders to find ways to leverage collaboration and information sharing to support the needed response. The involved parties are using already existing tools and creating new tools to identify patterns and trends indicative of these crimes, which are tremendously helpful in identifying potential suspects, he said. Members of the effort are also working on both proactive and reactive trainings, tactics, and recommended on-site procedures to help the proper authorities best allocate resources to combat this growing concern. This is far more than just a nuisance or cost of doing business for the industry. It is a great concern, not only to the victims, but also to law enforcement, elected officials, and the communities in which these illicit activities are occurring. TPRO President Ed Longenecker said from Austin that oil field theft is a significant challenge during boom and bust cycles, with a loss of millions of dollars accumulating during some months in the Permian Basin alone. Longenecker said the thieves like, but are not limited to, hydrocarbon laundering operations, pipe, copper, scrap metal, and drilling and production equipment. Local law enforcement, the FBI, and Department of Homeland Security have long recognized the exploitation of oil and gas companies by criminal organizations, he said. A high level of collaboration has ensued over the years among law enforcement organizations, and the FBI has a team working full-time to identify stolen oilfield equipment. The Texas legislature has also sought to address this issue and provide more tools to dismantle these criminal enterprises. This includes passing Senate Bill 1871 during the 85th legislative session in 2017 to create a specific targeted oil and gas theft statute with a steeper penalty ladder. Longenecker said the legislation focused on petroleum products, meaning crude oil, natural gas, or condensate. TPRO was pleased to support this bill, but clearly more tools and resources must be provided to address this persistent problem, including material and equipment theft, he said. DXOGA President Todd Staples said oilfield theft has long been a serious issue across Texas, with significant losses to producers on a yearly basis. Commonly targeted items include oil, pipe, and construction materials, as well as items like wire, batteries, and generators, which contain precious metals such as copper, aluminum, nickel, silver, and gold. Staples said from Austin, thankfully, SB 1871, introduced by Senator Judith Zaffirini, Democrat Laredo, was passed and signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott to establish felony-level penalties related to the theft of oil. In addition, Staples said, Texas has laws with severe penalties for the theft of precious metals. The passage of legislation to establish severe penalties for theft and increased employee training by producers to identify and prevent theft, as well as increased collaboration with law enforcement authorities, will help make a significant impact in discouraging oilfield theft, he said. Be the Change, Endeavor Energy Resources to host press conference announcing annual clay shoot. A press conference announcing the Endeavor Energy Resources Be the Change Clay Shoot will be held at 9 a.m. March 22nd at Midland Shared Spaces, 3500 North A Street in Midland. The news conference will be held by Endeavor Energy Resources and Be the Change Permian Basin. The Endeavor Energy Resources Be the Change Clay Shoot will take place at 9 a.m. April 26th at Jake's Clay Shooting Range, 13301 FM 1379 in Midland. Lunch and prizes will be at 11 a.m. The event will benefit the nonprofit organization Be the Change Permian Basin. Sponsorship opportunities for Jake's Clay Shoot range from $500 bronze to $5,000 platinum, with submission due by April 15th. Gold and platinum sponsors will enjoy complimentary golf carts, while bronze and silver sponsors may purchase them separately. Permian Basin Be the Change is a nonprofit organization that inspires to be the positive change in their lives and the lives of others. BTC believes that all kids deserve an opportunity to be the best version of themselves and provide programs that build trust, tools for goal setting, mentorship, and leadership skills. Odessa College to host Wellness Fair. The Odessa College Wellness Fair will be held from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. March 22nd at the OC Sports Center. It is free to attend. The Facebook post said this will be the largest wellness fair ever held at Odessa College. Attendees can learn about the resources and opportunities in the community. Eat a Sub, Help a Charity. Wondering what to eat and like helping others? Head to Jersey Mike's Subs on Wednesday, March 27th, and grab a sub. 100% of your purchase, whether in-store, online, or through the app, will go to charity. On March 27th, the two Jersey Mike's locations in Midland and Odessa will give every single dollar in sales, not just the profit, to Meals on Wheels of Odessa. It's all part of Jersey Mike's 14th annual Nationwide Day of Giving. All month, generous customers have been rounding up and making donations at more than 2,700 Jersey Mike's locations throughout the nation during the 14th annual Month of Giving fundraising campaign for local charities. On Day of Giving, it's our turn to give. The more we sell, the more we donate. Jersey Mike's locations nationwide give 100% of all sales on Day of Giving as part of the company's annual Month of Giving campaign in March. During this year's Month of Giving in March, Jersey Mike's hopes to surpass last year's record-breaking $21 million fundraising total. Proceeds support more than 200 local charities across the country, striving to fulfill their mission and make a difference. Since 2011, Jersey Mike's Month of Giving has raised more than $88 million for local charities. Jersey Mike's is committed to giving, making a difference in someone's life. For more information, please visit www.jerseymikes.com or follow on Facebook, facebook.com/jerseymikes, instagram.com/jerseymikes, TikTok.com/@jerseymikes, and X, formerly Twitter, twitter.com/jerseymikes. Join in the conversation at @jerseymikesgives. County makes plans for possible new courthouse. Proposed location would be next to new library. For more than a decade after their last attempt for a new courthouse, the Ector County Commissioners are considering bringing a bond proposal for a new building during the November 2025 election. If voters approve the bond, the new Ector County Courthouse would be built around East 2nd Street and North Texas Avenue, across the street from what will be the new Ector County Library. The new library location, approved by commissioners during their February 27th meeting, will relocate the Ector County Health Department at 211 North Texas Avenue. A new home for health department staff has yet to be decided, but could land at the site of the old library. Government bonds are issued to raise money to finance projects for day-to-day operations. Residents must vote and approve a bond before a taxing entity can issue debt. Requests for proposals are in the works, as are negotiations with the federal government about acquiring the land where the post office currently sits at 200 North Grant Avenue. We're working on obtaining that post office location, which is directly to the east of where the health department is and where the new library is going to be, Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett said. The new library and courthouse are scheduled to be part of a larger Ector County complex, which will see the courthouse at 300 North Grant Avenue become a future civic park across from the new Odessa College Park at 4th and Jackson. North Texas Avenue between East 2nd and 4th Street would be closed to allow foot traffic, and additional parking, including a parking garage, would be built. The last bond election for a new courthouse was in 2013 when residents voted against the measure. It's a big project, and it will literally change our community for generations, Fawcett said. The attention to detail that goes into this really matters, and we've already started doing the work. Reading the room. While the future of a new courthouse is to be determined, the plans for a new library are already in place, with groundbreaking scheduled for 2025 and opening in January 2027. The new 54,079-square-foot building would be two stories, featuring a common central support area, kids' zones, and meeting rooms. The current library at 321 West 5th Street has been home to the library since 1981. The new library would be the first new building for a library since the second library was built in 1942. Fawcett said plans for the old library building are the topic of many conversations and meetings between the county, the city, Medical Center Hospital, and Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. Nothing is firmed up, but Fawcett said the county health department could be located there along with some type of community medical location to help ease the traffic on MCH's emergency room, rather than someone who is indigent going to the ER for what can be handled by a physician at more of a clinic. We are giving that some thought and meeting this week about all these things. Fawcett said there are still hopes to complete some type of a municipal plaza courthouse as a partnership with the city. Ector County Library Director Howard Marks said a library committee has spearheaded the project. The cost of the new building is expected to be around $60 million and would be raised through public-private partnerships with local organizations. I feel extremely fortunate to be able to work on this project, Mark said. It's been a real team effort, and the advisory committee has been incredible. Using $250,000 from the American Rescue Plan Act, Fawcett said the money was used to fund a study through the Ivy Group. The group's 2022 report stated the library needed a new building, and input by Ector County residents showed they wanted to see the building as a lively community hub. Problems such as flooding and technical issues have plagued the current building. The report stated the state of the building was one of the main reasons residents were not visiting the library and updates would not suffice. Craig Stoker, executive director of Meals on Wheels of Odessa, who is also on the library committee, wants the new building to be more than just a place to check out books. This needs to be about learning. This needs to be about workforce development. This needs to be about healthcare. This needs to be about the arts, and this needs to be a community resource, Stoker said. Another category highlighted in the report was reaching more people, including Spanish-speaking residents. A 2022 report from the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin states, counties in the Permian Basin rank among the least literate and least educated in the United States, and 33% of students learning at or above grade level by ninth grade. The library is for everyone, Mark said. I think the main difference with the new building is that it's going to accommodate a lot more people and offer a lot more services. A proponent of the library, Fawcett said he recently took his daughters to the Dr. Seuss party at the library. The son of an educator, he stressed the importance of reading and how it offers the chance to explore new worlds and pass on favorite stories to a new generation. We deserve nice things in Ector County, Fawcett said. We work for them, and these buildings will last for decades. We want to be aggressive. We want something beautiful, and we want something that our community can be proud of. OC needs discussed at work session. Heating, air conditioning, pipes, and other infrastructure needs to be fixed at Odessa College, according to an analysis with JSA Architects presented at a Board of Trustees work session Wednesday. Cruz Castillo of JSA Architects and OC Vice President of Administrative Services, Ken Zartner, went through the list of what needs upgrading and replacing at a variety of buildings around the campus. Although Vision 2015 was complete, they didn't get to everything, Castillo said. No costs or methods of getting revenue for future projects was presented, but it was informational to let the board know what's coming up and what some possible recommendations might be. Over the past couple of years, you all have seen us go through property committees and come back to the board on several occasions about all of the infrastructure needs that we continue to have and things that continue to fail across the campus, Zartner said. In December, their stream system failed at the Electronics Technology Building, and they had no heat for a couple of weeks. Last summer, all of the heat cooling problems that we had, which resulted in the board supporting the purchase of a $400,000 chiller that we can move module and put around the campus whenever we need to. We're a tale of two campuses, a very beautiful new campus with new facilities and new buildings, and a very old campus that has a lot of needs and a lot of infrastructure concerns, Zartner said. We have pipes crumbling underneath us, he added. There was a pipe collapse in the library that knocked out the restrooms, and underground sewage pipe at Wilkerson Hall knocked that building out of service for a significant amount of time. The infrastructure beneath the Jack Rogers Fine Arts Building crumbled, and they had to repair that, as well as the heating and cooling systems. Additionally, the pool at the Sports Center was out for almost 2 years as they tried to make needed repairs. About a month ago, in the women's locker room, out of nowhere, we had an overhead pipe that just burst on our national championship contending team in their locker room in the middle of their season. They had no locker room anymore because this pipe burst and flooded out their entire facility. We just never know what is going to happen. We never know what's going to happen over the weekend or at night, Zartner said. As a result, Zartner said, they have tried to figure out how to address those needs, the costs associated with those needs, and how do they continue to move the college forward and complete Vision 2030. Castillo talked about replacing the Fine Arts Building, Sports Center, and student housing, to name a few. He added that the college can gain greater efficiency if the buildings are new. He also addressed the need for more parking. On the downtown community center, Castillo said they use 65 to 70% of that property to build a community center, which has been fantastic. We've been down there on the first Friday. You've seen how that's being utilized. I'm sure there will be a lot more activity. The southern portion of that property, we left just enough space to be able to have a three-story academic building there, Castillo said. Midland Health Department presents Health Fair. The Midland Health Department will present a health fair from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on April 6th at the Beale Ranch House, 5200 West Wall Street. The health fair promises to be an enriching experience, offering valuable resources and activities aimed at promoting wellness and fostering community connections. The event also will serve as a platform for individuals to engage in interactive and educational activities, emphasizing the importance of prioritizing health and well-being. Attendees can look forward to a diverse range of offerings, including games, community resources, and live demonstrations. Highlights of the event include hot free blood pressure checks. Certified healthcare professionals will be on site to provide complimentary blood pressure screenings, enabling attendees to monitor their cardiovascular health. Raffle prizes. Attendees will have the opportunity to participate in raffle draws, featuring exciting prizes such as a Rockhounds swag bag that includes 20 free game tickets, adding an element of excitement to the event. CPR demonstrations. Learn life-saving techniques through CPR demonstrations facilitated by qualified instructors, empowering individuals with essential skills in emergency situations. Physical fitness demonstrations. Engage in dynamic physical fitness activities and demonstrations, promoting the benefits of regular exercise and an active lifestyle. Free STI testing. The health fair will also offer free STI testing, providing individuals with access to essential healthcare services in a confidential and supportive environment. We are excited to organize this health fair as part of our ongoing commitment to promote wellness and community engagement in Midland, Danielle Marino, community health educator for the Midland Health Department, said in a news release. This event represents an opportunity for residents to come together, learn to prioritize their health in a supportive and interactive setting. For more information about the health fair, contact Marino at 432-425-2959.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.